everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and I have a very special guest with me here today, Kurt Badenhausen from Sportico. Kurt, you are the leader in sports valuations. You just published this morning, as of this recording, F1's 2025 valuations. So very excited to dig into all of the numbers. I have lots of questions. I had you on the podcast earlier this year to talk about last year's valuations. So excited to bring you back to discuss all the updates, of which there are many, and everything is seemingly going up and to the right. So it's going to be a fun conversation. Welcome back.
It's pretty wild. Your lighting is much better than mine, I'm realizing. I'm in a pod here in my office, which a black background and wearing a black shirt. So
you look great.
I could use some more lighting here. So I'm turning the corner. We got one wall is white. So it could be a little white wall.
That's too awesome. Well, I'm excited to chat. Maybe just to start, so high level, it sounds like on average, there's been almost a 50% increase in valuations for F1 teams. And every single team has seen at least a 20% increase in their valuation over the past 12 months alone. Yeah. I'm curious your thoughts on that and what you maybe broadly at a high level attribute that to.
Yeah, this is pretty unprecedented. I mean, I've been doing this for, 30 years, going back to Forbes for 22 years. And before that, a place called Financial World. And this is really unprecedented stuff. You know, we had a big step up in the NBA after Steve Ballmer paid $2 billion. But I should have looked back. I'm not sure we've ever seen 48% gain. If it's not the highest, it's certainly in the top two or three that we've ever seen this in any sports league. But that really speaks to the momentum that F1 has right now and how much it's flipped in terms of how this is thought of as an investment property, up over 110% over the last 2 years. I mean, we had the gain up 44% last year. I mean, it wasn't like this thing was creeping along then either. And arguably still a lot of runway left. Because there's still revenue opportunity. And if you think about how teams are being valued right now in F1 versus, you know, right now we have the average value behind, in terms of major sports properties, only behind the NFL and NBA.
Crazy.
And they're still being on a revenue multiple. They're still being valued at a significant discount to those two properties. So I think team owners still look at this and be like, hey, why shouldn't we be valued like an NBA team or an NFL team? We check all the boxes. We're global. We are scarce. We're much more scarcer than an NFL team, where there's 32 of them or 30 NBA teams. As I said, we're global, we're young, and we have cost certainty. That's kind of the holy grail of what people are looking at to invest in sports teams. So, it's been wild. We've seen, no control sales, but we've seen certainly a bunch of, LP stakes, and talking to all the teams, they're getting tons of inbound, and people just want to throw more and more money, at them. Trying to figure out what we're trying to ultimately gauge what a control stake, would sell for. So, if new ownership would take over, again, that doesn't happen very often in F1. It's not a perfect correlation between a limited partner investment and a control stake sale, but these are good data points. There's been a bunch of them that show the appetite, and a bunch of teams that have turned down deals for big numbers.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions in everything you just said.
That was a long rambling answer.
No, it was great. I think maybe just to start, you were talking about the revenue multiples across different leagues, and maybe just for our listeners to put some numbers on that. So F1, I saw in your piece this morning that it's like a 7 to 8 times revenue multiple in terms of valuation. And some of these other leagues are well above 10. And I'm curious if you think that F1 is just earlier on that curve of getting to those higher multiples, or if there's something fundamentally different about F1 that makes them be valued at a 7 or 8 times multiple versus a 10 or a 12 or a 13, and where that might trend.
Yeah, I mean, this happens over time, right? I mean, 2 years ago, if you looked at this, these teams are being valued at four times revenue, you know, but 3.5 times, 4 times revenue. Because before that, they're being valued at no time, one time revenue. You know, it's been an evolution, where there's just a step up, and it happens over time. NBA teams 12 years ago, 13 years ago, were valued at 3 times revenue. And here they are, 13, 14. The Lakers just sold for 16 times revenue.
Crazy.
So those NBA revenue multiples, they'll come down a little bit because the new TV contract kicks in this year. So a little artificially inflated because we were looking at 24, 25 revenue for our valuations. But it's not coming down a lot. The new step up, you know, $40 million extra TV money for the Lakers is, you know, less than 10% of their overall revenue. So I think it's a it's this happens over time, but I mean, it's happening very quickly in what we're seeing in F1. And if you looked at historical multiples, this is the third year we've done this at Sportico. So 2023 was, you know, we were probably talking, if I, you know, memory serves me, you know, something like 4 times revenue. Last year was probably 6 times, and here we are, you know, 48% gain. Again, I didn't look at the revenue changes, but $4.5 billion in revenue the 10 teams generated.
Crazy.
So revenues were up, you know, probably double digits. But the rest of that 48% gain we're talking about, that's multiple expansion. So that's pretty significant. And we're seeing it across all the major sports properties. And not all the major sports properties, but a lot of them. Certainly NFL, we mentioned NBA, NHL, which is a hot sports property. And then NWSL, women's sports, NWSL, WNBA. I mean, forget it. Those teams were selling for, you know, $2 million, $3 million 5 years ago, and
Crazy.
Now they're $400, $500 million properties.
Yeah. I mean, the word that some people throw around right now in a lot of things, but particularly in sports, is a bubble. And I'm curious your thoughts on that word. Like, do you think these valuations are justified? Or to your point, will it come down? Will it plateau? Are these inflated?
People have been using bubble a long time in sports. And after the Lakers deal went through at a $10 billion number, I did a lot of interviews and told anybody that would listen that this team's going to be valued at $20 billion in within 10 years. So is that 5 years? Is that 10 years? Either one would be a slowing down of growth. We're not going to see the kind of outsized growth that we've seen in, I don't think, in basketball, the NFL, or F1 for that matter. We're not going to continue. We can't continue to. We just run, you bump into the problem of large numbers. So the Golden State Warriors, Joe Lacob bought it for 450, or Leda Group bought it for $450 million in 2010. So over 15 years now, we value it at 11 something billion dollars. Is it going to increase 25x over the next 25 years and be worth $300 billion? I don't think so. That would be a lot for a sports team. But talking to the teams, they're pumped because their investment's
Definitely.
paying off. But they do expect some type of leveling off. They don't expect necessarily a 50% gain again next year
Totally.
and the year after. There is an expectation that, there will be a pause to a degree, you know. But listen, I mean, our value is going to go up, you know, $3.42 billion. Can they go up 20% next year and be worth $4 billion on average?
Yeah.
Sure. I don't see why not. You know, we value. You could argue that the values we have are, you know, conservative. If you think about the second Red Bull team, you know, getting offers $2.3 billion, you know, we you know, is that a legit deal? Is that fully funded? You know,
Yeah.
it's hard to say. Nobody really is talking about the details, but we value it still a tick below, you know, a bit below that, just to, I would argue our valuations in F1 and across most of the sports leagues are on the conservative side. I don't, I can count on two or three fingers the number of deals that went through in professional sports that were done at a value lower than how Sportico valued it or Forbes valued it when I worked there. I don't think we're, I don't think these are inflated by any stretch.
But growth will eventually slow, and that makes sense. But I'm curious your thoughts. Obviously, we had the Toto news this week that he is likely going to be selling part of his stake. We've had Lawrence Stroll sell part of his stake. We're seeing some of these individual owners start to take a little bit of money off the table at these very high valuations. And I'm curious kind of who comes in to plug that gap. And I feel like it probably is institutional money to some degree, but I'm curious your thoughts on what's coming. Is it PE entering? Is that a good thing? What are we in for?
I think it's a little bit of everything. PE has a different appetite for what they're looking for than sovereign wealth or an OEM or a billionaire who just loves F1. I mean, it's the Arctos bought in relatively early into Aston Martin, and they're looking to get a return for their shareholders. Number one, they don't care about any of the other stuff like tickets to the Miami race or whatever. That is what they're after. And I'm a full proponent of teams opening up to PE. I mean, it's passive investment where you're not going to be a squeaky wheel LP investor where you're calling up Toto and saying, "Oh, we got to do this, we got to do that." Like, I mean, I honestly, like, Bill, that is what goes through billionaires' heads. Do I want to bring in a limited partner that is going to make my life difficult? Like that I have to answer to. I don't want to, if I don't need the money, why am I bringing people in? Now, again, it makes sense to take a little money if I'm Toto Wolff and 90% of my net worth is tied up in the value, my Mercedes stake. Sure. Why don't go sell a piece instead of having to borrow against that stake with a bank? So we were happy to break that news on Tuesday. I think, but again, talking to teams, they're hearing from everybody. There's former team principals that I guess are out maybe looking to raise some money to do something. OEMs, sovereign wealth, corporate money, institutional money, and then just billionaires who like what you want to be, you want to be in the conversation, you want to be on the team plane. And so those people are less price sensitive. Well, I mean, sovereign wealth is the least price sensitive, but those billionaires, you're buying, you have $250 million to put into a team, and whether you get 4% of the team or 5% of the team or 6% of the team probably doesn't matter to you, but that makes a big difference on the valuation whether that 250 is for 4% or 6%, and the team owners, wants to hold on to as big a piece of the pie as they can.
So if you're a racing bulls and you've got an offer on the table for 2.3 billion or whatever it is, like, why wouldn't you sell? I'm curious. Like, what do you think's going through their mind of why
Well,
wouldn't they sell
you're in the middle of this, right? You hear
that?
it all. You hear it, I'm sure, a lot more than I do. You cover it year round. I mean, what kind of advantage is it owning two teams out of 10 in this in a race circuit? There's a lot of synergy there, and a lot of things you can do with it. And does the owners of Red Bull sports drink need $2 billion? Not right now. Their core business is doing great. But with we'll see if the energy drink business takes a downturn. I mean, it's an interesting company because it's owned by you know, two billionaires now on two different continents.
Yep.
You know, do they ultimately, one of them ultimately decide like, enough already, let's consolidate, let's focus in, or again, the economy tanks and the energy business, you know, drink business tails off and we need to raise some money. Why not? But it wouldn't surprise me, to be honest, if they go out and sell a piece.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody's thinking about it. I don't know about Ferrari, but I would argue every other team is thinking, should we sell? Should we sell 5%, 10%, take some money off the table? Again, I think most of these teams expect values to continue to grow. I don't think it's people are want to get out, but just, again, it makes some business sense to just take our valuation out for a ride. And if we can raise a few hundred million dollars because we're investing in, you know, instead of debt financing, because you're building, you know, you're Lawrence Stroll, you're investing like crazy. Williams is investing a ton. I mean, Williams hasn't taken on any money, but some of these teams that, you know, want to get to the top of the grid are pouring so much money into their teams. So it makes sense maybe to do that with, you know, raising money through equity sale.
Yeah. And Williams had a long way to catch up in terms of even just sponsorship revenue through the door, like getting Atlassian signed, and obviously Doralton came in 2020. Right. But I want to talk a little bit about Mercedes, because on the back of the Toto news, also you all reported that Mercedes record profit for an F1 team. I'm curious, in your eyes, what makes Mercedes such a financially well-run organization? Like, why are they just heads and shoulders above some of these other teams?
It's that, you know, that German efficiency. listen, they have some built-in advantages. I mean, the engine program, the legacy, the design capabilities they have, financially, I mean, the brand's incredible. So that helps with sponsorship partners. You know, what's interesting, I mean, they finished second, they finished second 2 years ago. Last year they were fourth, I guess. So actually this year's revenue will be flat. For my understanding, most teams, almost everybody else will be up. But that, you know, that drop down from second to fourth will impact their finances. So, you know, they're an interesting one. I mean, all the F1 financials are a little interesting because they're measuring different things. Are you making engines? Are you, you know, buying your engines? Are you parking? You know, if you're Red Bull, what's an expense? What's a revenue? And Mercedes, there's a little bit of that too. What's Mercedes? What's the car? What's the auto manufacturer? What's the F1 team?
Yep.
And of course, with the cost caps now, you have to think about it even more. And it's being tracked, and they're, you know, making sure everybody's adhering to the rules. But it does get a little fuzzy. But Mercedes, you know, great business, great brand, which helps them. And Ferrari too. So Ferrari is one of the few companies that you don't have a real clear window into. You have a good within their financials. Almost all the F1 teams report their financials. They're based in UK, report them through Companies House. So we get a really good window. Again, it's not always a perfect. You talk to a couple teams, they're like, well, we don't put everything into Companies House because some of our operations are based here and we don't have to report it in England or in the UK. And so Ferrari is obviously not based in the UK. So they do break out their revenue in their annual report, which also folds in a little bit more than the F1 team because merchandise they put in there, which again, what, how much is tied to the car company versus the F1 team is hard to tell. And profit wise, we are, you know, doing our best to estimate there because they do not break out profitability for the F1 team specifically.
Interesting. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might not be Ferrari's strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating, reduce sugar cravings, help you feel satisfied longer, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire order with code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. The end of F1 season sneaks up fast, and then all of a sudden it's holiday season, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. I really have been using Uncommon Goods for years, and I actually got someone in my life a book full of New York Times covers from their birth year over the years. It's one of the most special, customizable gifts I've ever seen, and that person still talks about it as their favorite gift they've ever received. And Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard Formula One fans and football fans, to foodies, mixologists, avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice, and they've donated more than $3 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/paddockproject. That's uncommongoods.com/paddockproject for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. I'm curious about what else is maybe driving some of this increase. Like, obviously you have a rising tide lifts all boats factor with F1 generally. Like, even Alpine, which is now 10th in the Constructors' Championship, grew like 30-something% last year.
Yeah.
But for the teams that have seen the biggest year-over-year increase, McLaren, Williams, Racing Bulls, that does correlate with on-track performance to some degree. Yeah. And I'm curious how much you think that's driving these valuations, whether from an increase in sponsorship or whatever else may play into that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, Williams, we talked about, I mean, making massive investment to kind of bring this brand back to where it was. And they are in line for significant revenue increases, bringing in a title sponsor for the first time in 5 years, moving up from 9th to 5th, means big payday, coming out, and sponsors take notice of that. They want to get on board. I mean, you want your guy on the podium celebrating. You want your driver at the front of the track getting TV time, and so that certainly helped with McLaren. I mean, to go back to back It just changes the conversation with sponsors. Yeah. And so F1 teams are largely driven. I mean, the finances are driven by sponsorship and the prize money pool. So if you're finished in front of the pack, that's great for the prize money. And it helps on the sponsor side.
Definitely.
And then if we think about Alpine or Haas, you know, teams at the bottom of the financial table, the sport is hot right now. So there is that halo effect that it just kicks off more money to everybody. Cause geez, maybe I can't play with the Mercedes McLaren, area. Cause that might cost me, you know, $80 million, $100 million to be a title sponsor. But if I want to just get an F1 and I'm MoneyGram, I'll partner up with Haas.
It's going to
cost me 75% less. So I think there is a bit of that. The growth in the U.S. has been phenomenal. Three races, you know, American companies have more money to spend on marketing than any other country in the world. And so That has certainly helped. The influx of American sponsorship dollars into the sport has been incredible. But still a lot of money. There's, you know, talking to some of the teams, they recognize that there's potentially some. I mean, they're reaching the point where all the inventory is kind of sold. It's not like they have a lot left to do.
There's only so much space on the car and the jersey.
Exactly. There's only so many categories you can be the exclusive partner in. You know, they try to splice and dice, you know, the financial services categories, probably five different brands. But, you know, and then ultimately what you want to do is you move on to kind of like the old Manchester United model where you could have a bank, you know, you want to be my Asian banking partner and I'm going to have my European banking partner, and then you splice it up in the area because they have a big enough audience in each of those individual territories.
That's the beauty of a global sport.
And Asia kept coming up with people that we just haven't tapped that well enough.
That's an opportunity. Market, deep pockets. There's a lot of growth to be had there.
So that when we talk about what's ahead, I think that the teams and F1 as a whole with Liberty, they see that as just really an untapped, in addition to Africa, but largely Asia, is just a huge opportunity.
Yeah. Speaking of the U.S., I'm curious what you make of the Apple deal. I think on paper, $140 million looks like a big increase, but I think if you factor in the F1 TV US revenue right now, it's actually not that big of a step up. So I'm curious your thoughts on that deal. And yeah, were you surprised?
I was surprised, to be honest with you. I think it's really a function of ESPN having to, you know, F1's a hot sport, but if you look at the ratings on ESPN over the last few years, they're relatively flat. And so ESPN has to do the economic calculation here. You know, they just massive NBA deal is kicking in this season at a significant increase. You know, talk of NFL opt out in 2029, what's that going to cost? So for ESPN, so the ESPN really has to, they can't have everything anymore. there's just not that money there. And so I think the ratings, the demographics are great on the customer, but I just think they have trouble monetizing it, to be honest with you, on broadcast TV. Mm-hmm. And making you know, $200 million a year for one ratings point, a few hours a day, a few hours every Sunday, or for 24 Sundays. I think that was just hard for them to figure out how to make it work, you know, because now could they have done it with their new streaming product that's going to launch? Maybe, but it's saving money in one area that has to go into another sport. So, and for Apple, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. And MLS just announced actually today, as we're talking, that they are getting rid of the season pass kind of double paywall that exists in MLS right now, and is certainly not, certainly been a hindrance for people watching Major League Soccer. Because not only do you have to have Apple TV, but you also have to then subscribe to a specific MLS season pass. So that is interesting, because now that's getting towards more what I think the sports properties are hoping to see from Apple. Mm-hmm. Them go harder into sports and be a destination spot for sports year round, as Amazon is doing right now because they have the NFL. Now they're going to have basketball starting now. They're doing baseball. And so, you know, I think that's ultimately what we were talking about, you know, sports, we were talking about 10 years ago, what they were hoping Apple would do, but Apple hasn't done it. They've really, really only kind of dipped their toes into sports. So I think it's a good thing for Liberty, because, and they've talked about it publicly and in their earnings calls, talking about, you know, all these other, you know, whether it's Sky or other broadcasters that have rights, be like, Oh, you don't like it? Okay, well, we got a $4 trillion company that we're in business with right now that they'll take. I bet you they'll take up the UK rights too if they want. So that's a nice little hook for them, and all these leagues are hoping Apple, and they've talked about it, will promote this sport through the entire Apple ecosystem. So Apple News and Apple Music and all the other things, you know, your Apple Watch is gonna get all your F1 updates. Apple is ubiquitous in our lives. And so again, MLS talked about this. They hoped that MLS then would become part of our lives too, because they were in bed with Apple, but that hasn't happened. But F1, I think, has a much better chance of being integrated into the Apple ecosystem, and so yeah. Again, the money, the dollars, I totally agree, not impressive. And you would have thought maybe somebody else, you know, NBC's leaning in harder into sports, but I think it makes a lot of sense for Liberty in terms of helping to just spread the sport.
Agreed. And maybe one final question. You ended your piece saying multiple team owners Sportico spoke with over the past month compared Ferrari to the NBA's Los Angeles Lakers, who just sold for $10 billion. And you ask, which would you rather own? I'm curious your answer to that question and why.
Oh, they asked me. They said, which would you? That was.
And what's your
answer?
They
asked me. Well, I think I'd take Ferrari for 6.4 as a value investor. I'm taking Ferrari at 6.4 over the Lakers at 10 billion all day long.
Okay.
You know, both at 10 billion, I'm probably more of a basketball guy. So I'm taking the Lakers and sitting courtside watching LeBron and Luka. But it raises an interesting point, because if you think about global brands, and part of the reason the Lakers sold for $10 billion is they're a global brand. The NBA is a global sport. But Ferrari, like, that is a unicorn brand.
Absolutely.
They don't, you know, the Lakers are big deal, but so are the Knicks. So are the Bulls. Like, there's other really big deals in basketball. Ferrari's kind of Ferrari. And I know some people kind of, it hasn't been a great year or great week for that matter, or a great year or a great few years maybe for Ferrari, but they're, and talking to some younger people, they're like, yeah, I don't know. The Ferrari thing, you know, I don't remember Michael Schumacher, you know, so, but Ferrari still holds a really unique, you know, we have Mercedes and McLaren really closing the gap from a valuation standpoint. But F1's hot. So it's, I think you're going to have $10 billion teams in F1, but before too long.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy about that. I love to see a sport I love continue to succeed. Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining. Your work is always as incredible, and it's like Christmas morning for me every time it comes out. So
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thanks for having me on, Tiggy.